This is KBOL's The Voice of the Middle East. صوت الشرق الاوسط من اذاعه كيبل و صدای خاورمیانه از رادیو KBOO.
طلق بابنا طلونا السيارات بين ربوعنا قلبنا ضحكت سهرات جوانا وطلق بابنا طلونا بين ربوعنا قلبنا ضحكت سهرات جوانا بين فيات غنينا نحن حكايات في بال مننا نغمات موال 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 لما النسمات تحلاله بين الآبات بينات لما النسمات تحلال بين الآبات بينات
Welcome and good evening. This is Gudarz Ektidari, your host for the Voices of the Middle East. This is another installment for the month of November. And welcome to the show. We are on 90.7 FM in Portland, Oregon, and on the web at www.kboo.fm. For show tonight, we have a guest that we will be talking to from UCLA. And at the meantime, I'd like to touch on a couple of issues before we start. And that is this month, or actually today, is a start of another round of registration for visitors from the Middle East, 25 countries, mostly, or actually about 99% of them from Islamic countries. They need to go through another round of registration by Homeland Security ruling. And as you remember, last year, there were about 80,000 of them have registered. 12 to 13,000 have been deported or and entered into a deportation proceeding. Some were arrested in Southern California, especially the concentration of Iranians in that area caused a lot of trouble. INS was not prepared for interviews and the registration process, and the very last day they had about 2,000 people jailed. In other cities, pretty much the same. In Portland, we had also the same situation, and this is another round of those registration. Unfortunately, a discriminatory and kind of singling out people from that region, even though the law that was passed by Congress did not specify a single country. And it was supposed to apply to all the visitors to the United States, but in acting, it only applied to the Islamic countries. That's an issue that we need to kind of pay attention to, especially if you are a visitor, if you are on a student visa, and you're not a resident alien, then you need to go through this registration starting today. And I don't have the schedule with me, but you can contact INS or their website to make sure you are legit in this situation. For right after my last show in October, actually on the Friday, after the show on 14th of October, the Nobel Peace Committee decided to give the Nobel Peace Prize for 2003 to an Iranian woman and human rights advocate, Dr. Shirin Ebadi. And she will be receiving her award on December 10th in Oslo. And based on that, I probably will be talking to our guest tonight, and we'll ask Dr. Keddie some question regarding that. My guest tonight is Professor Nikki Keddie. She's a professor of Middle East history at UCLA. She's a fellow of the American Academy of Arts and Sciences and have received Lifetime Achievement Awards from the American Historical Association, the Middle East Studies Association, and the Encyclopedia Iranica Foundation. She has had fellowships from the Guggenheim Foundation, Social Science Research Council, American Association of University Women, and the Rockefeller Foundation. She has a PhD from UC Berkeley in history and has been writing not just for many famous newspapers, including LA Times and New York Times. And she has several books. The latest one is Modern Iran, Roots and Results of Revolution, New Haven, Yale University, which came out 2003. Qajar Iran and the Rise of Reza Khan, 1796 to 1925, Costa Mesa, California, Mazda Publication, 1999. Iran and the Muslim World, Resistance and Revolution, London Macmillan, 1995. And Women in Middle Eastern History, Shifting Boundaries in Sex and Gender, co-edited with Beth Baron, New Haven, Yale University Press, 1991, and many articles about women issues in the Middle East, in Iran specifically, and also the modernity in the Middle East. I would like to welcome Dr. Keddie to the show. Welcome, Nikki.
Thank you very much for having me. Pleased to be here.
It's a pleasure to talk to you on the phone. Let me start, as I mentioned, with Shirin Ebadi's Nobel Peace Award. What is your opinion on that selection, and what is your take on this action by a European body?
Well, I think it's a wonderful thing to have happened, and I think the people who gave it were very conscious that this was a person whose activities had a chance really to change or help change the nature of a society which is in some ways in transition and full of contradictions, so they didn't give it only for her personal achievement, but also in relation to a situation which they were aware of in Iran.
I realize, based on your book on women in Middle Eastern history, you have a pretty good insight on the situation of women in the Middle East and historical perspective on that. Could you talk a little bit about the modern situation and the women movement, basically in the Middle East and in Iran specifically?
Yes. I think that there has been a women's movement in the Middle East beginning really in the late 19th century in some areas like Egypt, and certainly in the 20th century in Iran, and beginning often with charitable and social work, but a kind of social work which was really pioneering. That is, women's organizations often set up the first schools for girls, which became a government job but wasn't immediately a government job. And also the charitable work that they did was some of the first, let's say, secular, not mosque-based charitable work. And so these were things which became important for the whole of society. And then they campaigned for the vote, which they got in many places. The chief problem, I mean, I could talk at great length, so I'll wait for specific questions, but I should say the chief problem in many societies, and I think in Iran, is that they came up against a traditional culture which hadn't had the hundreds of years to change that the traditional culture in the West had from medieval times. And so the people associated with that traditional culture, whether clerics or tribal leaders or even a lot of the common people, have resisted and continue to resist in many cases a number of these changes. Nonetheless, the actual social position of women in terms of education, jobs, health, and such has progressed partly because of women's activities in Iran and in most Middle Eastern countries in the last century.
What is your opinion on the notion that exists in the West that, for example, Islam is prohibiting women from taking part in civic life or in public sphere, and especially comparing or paying attention to the situation of women in Iran after the Islamic Revolution of 1979, how can you basically argue the situation of women now and compare it with the Shah's era?
Well, those are two questions. Let's start with the situation of women now compared to the Shah's era. In some ways, the government actually did things that turned out to be favorable to women, that is, in education at all levels, so that now in relation to girls and women in their late teens and early 20s, there's a 97% literacy rate, and admissions to universities in Iran based on test scores are now over 62% women, and the health care has improved, and the family planning birth control program in Iran is perhaps the best in the world. It has turned around since first birth control was opposed in through the 80s, and then there was a complete turnaround with a very effective program, so that reproduction is down to replacement rate, slightly over two per couple, and that will give women more freedom to enter the workforce, and also girls, I think, will get more attention, are getting more attention in these smaller families. So that there's all that. At the same time, in terms of the law, there have been rather few reforms in Islamic law. There have been some which I could list, but they're still definitely unequal. And there are, of course, still occasional severe punishments for things like adultery. Then there's control on behavior, dress, what one can do. Even though that's lessening now, boys and girls do see each other and things of that sort. So it is a very contradictory picture in Islam. Now, in Iran. Now, do you want me to talk about Islam too? I mean, that's the second part of your question.
Yeah, actually, I guess that would also answer really the fact about Islam being a factor in prohibiting women in participation. So,
well, I think I do want to say one thing about that. I don't think you can talk about, and people do it all the time, but I don't think one should talk about Islam in that abstract way. I mean, it's like saying Christianity limits women or something like that. The traditionally dominant interpretations of these religions were certainly, and in many cases still are, very unequal between genders. But it's possible to have more than one interpretation, and there's certainly people working now on different interpretations of Islam. Now, whether they will be successful is something that I think has not yet been demonstrated, because up till date, those countries which make a point of calling themselves Islamic still are not egalitarian regarding women.
I'm reading a piece from an article you wrote in the introduction to the book. You mentioned the guarding of women has been strong in Near Eastern and Mediterranean societies from ancient times. As many as
Islamic the what women? I'm sorry.
You wrote, the guarding of women.
The guarding?
Yeah.
Guarding?
Guarding.
No, I don't think so.
Okay, it's on page 3 of the book, Women in Middle Eastern History.
And it says?
The guarding of women. The guarding of women has been strong in Near Eastern and Mediterranean societies from ancient time. As many Islamic customs go back to the pre-Islamic Near East, something should be said about that before discussing Islam. In the first known reference to wailing, an Assyrian legal text of the 13th century, it is restricted to respectable women and prohibited for prostitutes. Basically, what I get from reading is that you're saying that many of these traditions are mostly cultural and not coming out of the religious book. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, if we are talking about veiling, the Quran itself does not call for veiling, although it's predominantly interpreted as calling for veiling. It does not. It says that women should veil or cover their bosoms and their ornaments. Now, ornaments was later, it was pretty clearly from the words meant things like bangles and such. The ornaments was then interpreted to mean hair and neck and things of that sort. And then there's another verse that says that men should only look at Muhammad's wives from behind a curtain. And this then got spread to other, to become general. But the actual custom of veiling preceded Islam in these empires and in the surrounding area. And so it is not, did not come in because of Islam. And I think that may be true also of a number of other customs regarding women and practice.
For the sake of people who may not have really much of insight about the politics in the Middle East, can you try to kind of walk us through this and give us an opinion on what is happening right now with all these, the conflicts that exist in the Middle East and the civil society, and as it's being sometimes referred to as Arab streets, or the issue of people participation in civil society. How do you see that moving?
That's a huge question, but I think one of the important aspects of that question is that outside of Iran, and to some degree Turkey, then, so we're talking about the Arab world, there has been a lot of disillusionment with secular nationalist governments such as Nasser and some of the others who haven't come through economically or even socially as much as was hoped. And with the, particularly with the fall of the Soviet Union, also disillusionment with communism, so that a lot of people have come to Islamic politics as a kind of answer to their problems. I mean, people everywhere, and perhaps particularly when they're impoverished and have a lot of problems, want to see a single and fairly simple solution that could answer the problems they have. And this happened in Iran before the 1979 revolution, and now Iranians have become disillusioned with that. But in the Arab countries, most of them, you don't have the kind of government that you had in Iran before the revolution. And so people are turning to Islamic movements very much in the hopes of solving their problems. And some of these movements, you know, call for greater social justice and economic justice, just as Khomeini did. And so even people who maybe once upon a time were leftists, or the kind of people who were leftists, are attracted to those movements. I don't think the Arab street is a particularly useful phrase. You know?
Yeah. Comparing the, I guess, the new conservatives' plan for changing the environment and bringing democracy to Middle East with what is happening in Iran today, What is your opinion on what works and what doesn't?
Well, I don't think democracy can be brought in from the outside, especially with troops. And I think Iraq and Afghanistan are very good examples of that now. Neither of them looks very hopeful for anything that could meaningfully be called democracy, even though they're claiming there's a constitution which is somewhat more democratic coming up in Afghanistan. The actual structure of power in Afghanistan, which one would have to overcome, of warlords and tribal leaders, people like that, no matter what the Constitution says, are not going to be overcome by a constitution. Iraq, you have the problem of divisions, ethnic divisions, and things of that sort, which, again, I don't think are going to be solved by a constitution. So I think that the hopeful thing in Iran is that you have people who are thinking and arguing and acting in a serious way, despite all the obstacles, and thinking of means by which they can get more rights and fighting for them, as Shirin Ebadi and other lawyers do in courts, and having as much publication as they can, arguing about these things. So I think that they're developing a more mature approach, and I'm hopeful for this long term. I think there can be some influence from the outside, but it has to be a much more indirect kind, and often from non-governmental groups, or often sort of the generalized European pressures, but not the kind of pressure the U.S. has been putting on. And an example of that is the Moroccan king, who, with support of women's groups and parliament — you do have a parliament in Morocco — is now proposing, and will probably get passed through parliament, a series of very important reforms in the status of women, which will lead to a much greater democratization of that society. Now, it doesn't always have to be done by a king, but if you can get a government that is willing to work with popular movements and with parliamentary forces that aren't just his own puppets, then you can get some progress. And that was partly because also of European pressures in that direction, but they weren't, hitting on the head pressures.
You mentioned like some secular governments such as Nasser and
the Baath government in Syria. Iraq and Syria.
The success of those projects within the society, how deep it goes?
Well, I don't know. I'm not a real expert on those areas, but I think that in some social things, those governments accomplish more than we're really willing to grant. I mean, that is, Saddam was a terrible dictator, but the Baath government in Iraq did have economic and social projects, did have greater equality for women. I did visit Syria very briefly in the 80s, and again, it's a dictatorial government, but they had women certainly had greater freedoms, and there was a very interesting non-discrimination among all the religious groups they had in Syria. So the problem is to get those accomplishments combined with a growing democracy, and that can't be done overnight. It's something that has to be worked for.
Dr. Keddie, we are going to a ID break for 2 minutes, and then I'll be back, and we will continue talking to Dr. Nikki Keddie, professor of Middle East history at UCLA, and her latest book, Modern Iran, Roots and Result of Revolution, has been published in 2003, New Haven, Yale University Press, and we will open our phone lines after the break.